Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. And President Trump chose the National Day of Prayer designation yesterday to sign a long-awaited executive order promoting free speech and religious liberty, according to the White House. At the heart of this order is the loosening of rules around tax-exempt organizations like churches and religious groups. Those rules prevent them from direct political involvement or from endorsing candidates. Micah Schwartzman is professor of constitutional and First Amendment law at the University of Virginia School of Law. Also co-editor of The Rise of Corporate Religious Liberty. Micah, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks.
We're going to talk about what this executive order doesn't do, because there were some disappointed people in churches and religious organizations. But what does it do exactly?
The order basically has two parts. The first part tells the Secretary of Treasury, controlling the IRS, that it should not enforce campaign restrictions on religious nonprofits any more than it does enforce those against secular nonprofits. But that doesn't accomplish very much, because those kinds of restrictions aren't often enforced against religious nonprofits as it is. Basically, the order is telling the IRS not to do things that it's already not doing. No churches, or almost no churches, are prosecuted at risk of losing their tax-exempt status under the so-called Johnson Amendment, which is what restricts tax-exempt nonprofits from engaging in campaigns and elections. The second thing that it does is it tells some secretaries of various agencies to consider passing new regulations about the contraception mandate under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, that required businesses to fund contraception. But it doesn't tell them what those regulations should include or what they should do. So it's just kicking the can down the road.
Let's listen to President Trump yesterday at the National Prayer event as he was sort of billing why he thought this was an important thing to sign.
As I campaigned across the country, faith leaders explained that they were prevented from speaking their minds because of a 1954 rule known as the Johnson Amendment. I spoke about it a lot. Under this rule, if a pastor, priest, or imam speaks about issues of public or political importance, they are threatened with the loss of their tax-exempt status, a crippling financial punishment.
Now, Micah, you already talked about how these aspects of the Johnson Amendment are rarely enforced, but I have been in many church services on Sunday covering politics where pastors speak of many issues of political importance. They just weren't supposed to endorse specific candidates by name, right?
That's correct. I think the president vastly overstates the reach of the Johnson Amendment. What that amendment does is prohibit nonprofits from endorsing particular political candidates. They can talk about politics and moral issues as much as they like. So I don't think there's any restriction on what ministers and pastors can say from the pulpit on a Sunday morning or what have you. I don't think there are any threats to take away their tax-exempt status for them explaining their moral and political views.
So, Micah, there were a lot of disappointed pastors, churches, political activists from evangelical organizations who were looking for more here. Many of them were looking for political cover if organizations object to Obama-era rules on things like LGBT hiring. Was that even in the purview of the White House in the first place, and why didn't they get it?
There was a leaked version of a memo a few months back which had included provisions that lifted anti-discrimination requirements on federal contractors. That is, under Obama, federal contractors were not permitted to discriminate on religious grounds against LGBT persons. And there was some anticipation among conservative religious groups that this order would address those restrictions. And the order simply didn't. It had nothing to say about equality requirements for LGBT persons in federal contracting. Just wasn't in there. And so a lot of people were disappointed about the scope of the executive order.
So if the executive order itself didn't go as far as many religious organizations would have wanted, it seems as though most of these fights are still destined to take place in the courts. There are cases pending now involving religious exemptions from tax laws and who qualifies. We saw the Hobby Lobby case. There's a lot more to come, it would seem, at the level of the federal courts and even the Supreme Court.
That's right. There's litigation pending. For example, there's a bill in Mississippi which includes some exemptions for those who don't want to engage in religious ceremonies for LGBT persons. There's other litigation that we should expect over conscientious objection and religious exemptions. This is not the end of the story by a long way. There'll be a lot more coming in the future.
So those cases will be high profile. They will be important. They will have the teeth of law, certainly, and the teeth of Supreme Court precedent. Before we let you go, Micah, you know, one ACLU lawyer who I read about in the New York Times, there was a lot of alarm about this executive order before it was signed, basically said it was an elaborate photo op with no discernible policy outcome. Do you share that kind of blasé attitude at this point?
That's the consensus view. This order was a dud. It didn't do very much. It didn't tell the IRS to do anything really that it's not already doing. Not much content here.
Do you have a sense of why the White House would issue an empty order at this point?
I mean, I think this was a political show, not much more than that.
A political show and not much more. An empty photo op, says another lawyer from the ACLU. And lots of anxiety, not only from LGBT groups and others, but also consternation from groups on the right, evangelical groups and churches, who don't think they got enough from a free speech and religion protection order from the Trump White House just yesterday. Micah Schwartzman, professor of constitutional and First Amendment law at the University of Virginia School of Law. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.